Welcome, everyone, to Cheers to Leaving. This is our very first episode of the season, and I am psyched. Today, as you know, if you've been watching our socials, whether you're in our Facebook private group or on our Instagram account, you've probably seen that we are making a few changes this year and that we have a new co-host and we have new cover art and new year, new us, I guess. So this season, I guess the direction that the vision that I had for it is I felt like we had just spent a lot of time listening to people's traumatic stories, which is important. I know that was important for me when leaving religion because I needed to find solidarity with people. But now that I feel well into my deconstruction, as I'm sure some of you do, I feel like I need to, in some ways, move on a little bit to say, what does my life look like now? What do I want to believe in? What do I want to learn about? What do I want to be a part of? You know, it's almost like, okay, so now that this is sort of in my past, not that we're not forever deconstructing, but it just helps to kind of look and say, okay, what do I want my life to look like now? So with that, I really wanted to kind of go into a direction of learning about beliefs and spiritual practices and theories and all kinds of things that we weren't really allowed to learn about in the church, and sort of, I guess, like destigmatize a lot of things that we, you know, heard about Satanism or that we heard about paganism or that we heard about, you know, any sort of other beliefs that we were just warned against and they were just bad. I mean, even, you know, witches or things like that, that we weren't allowed to watch Harry Potter because, you know, witches were bad. And so it's like in our journey of deconstruction, I think it would be super helpful, or at least I think it will be super helpful for me to rediscover these things for ourselves and sort of take back this knowledge of being like, yeah, I know about that. And yeah, I like discovered that. And like, maybe you'll find that this is something that you want to pursue, or maybe you'll just be like, wow, that's really eye-opening, and I'm glad I learned about that. So no pressure. We're not trying to convert here to anything. We're just trying to explore new ideas and beliefs and spiritualities and just sort of kind of take back our, you know, like being spiritual again, if that's something that you're into. So with that being said, I chose a co-host who is also super into that, as well as someone who I really enjoy having conversations with about these things. And again, if you followed our socials, you'll know who it is, but I would like to introduce you guys to Cameron Smith. He has been our sound guy for the past, God, I don't even know, 2 years. I feel like 2 years, year and a half.
Yeah, something like that.
As well as being on our podcast in episode 25, Down the Rabbit Hole. So if you haven't listened to that, you should. It's a lot. We talk about a lot. And
bro was just yapping the whole time.
Yeah, we did, but it was like also so complex. I think you went into like time and measuring in between time. I don't remember, but it was like, and then I also think I remember telling you that I was in a car accident and I wasn't sure if I jumped a timeline. So it's a really fun episode and you should go listen to it. But anyway, Cameron is a wealth of knowledge in a lot of things because he never stops learning, which is awesome. It's perfect. It's perfect for us and it's perfect to have really great conversations. And specifically, religions is something we're going to dive into because, of course, we as evangelicals and Christians were only allowed to know about that form of faith and everything else was bad. So, yeah, today we're going to dive in a little bit into kind of what Cameron is into at the moment, and what he knows a lot about, and I'll let him tell you about that because I'm not even going to pretend to know. So, anyway, Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Cameron Smith to the podcast. Hey,
what's up, my fellow slimes? I'm Cameron. Thank you so much, Rachel, for not overselling me.
You're welcome.
And I am here to convert you all to my religion because you're all wrong, and I'm going to show you why I'm correct. So,
by the end of this episode, you will be in Cameron's cult.
Yeah, and if you don't, you're all kicked from the Facebook group. So that's what's going to happen. Now,
all right. Anyway, no,
strong anyway. Start, Cameron. Let's go. we kind of again, if you're in the Facebook group specifically, I didn't really talk about this on Instagram or anything, but I mentioned briefly about my spiritual philosophy or religious philosophy. They're all kind of interchangeable at this point, but that being what is known as archetypal paganism, which is a really pretentious way of saying that I give credence to pretty much all religions.
I love it.
And
you're like, yeah, all religions, totally. I'm down.
Well, yeah. So, kind of a background on archetypal paganism. It's a form of what's known as syncretism, which I'll explain in a moment. But basically, the concept of archetypal paganism is looking at my specific focus is on like world mythologies. So, like what people think of when they think of paganism. The original definition of the term heathen or pagan is literally just not Christian. It was a term coined by the colonial Christians just to other everybody else who wasn't
which
Christian.
Is but so audacious to just be like, everything else is shit unless it's Christian.
We will call it
paganism.
Yeah, it was good times though during that period and still today. But I try to stay educated on, well, I don't, I guess when I say try to stay educated, there's not any new updates in the world cultures, philosophies, but or, in mythologies or anything as far as I know, but I have a focus on various like pantheons and specifically just because of my genetic heritage. And what I found to be the most interesting and relatable to my life is the Norse pantheon. So, you know, old boy Thor up there.
Oh, okay.
And so that comes up with the idea of syncretism, which is kind of the pure form that branches off into various types of neo-paganism, which is essentially the idea that taking stories and beliefs from various religions and basically forming your own. If you're familiar with like Carl Jung, he was what we kind of considered like the father of syncretism. He developed the idea of the archetype, which is kind of where we get into archetypal paganism, is that like when you talk about these various mythologies, you notice that while a lot of the stories are different, there are a lot of very similar roles that are played in the stories, and that's what we call the archetypes. And his idea was that the people that told these stories, you know, I'm not out here really believing that Thor fought a giant world serpent. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not necessarily saying, yeah, I mean, I'm not arrogant enough to say that, you know, old boy ain't up there chilling right now, but, you know, it's more of a focus on the people that told these stories, like kind of where they were at and, you know, learning from the philosophies that they were trying to teach and what they deemed important. So it's kind of like a historical religious belief, I suppose. And in turn, eventually we'll get to like the spiritualism practices behind that.
So
if
when
any
you
of
say,
that made sense.
It did. Yes. When you say that, like, okay, so the Thor fighting a serpent, when you're looking back on these, I guess at the time that myth was created or whatever, are we looking at like essentially people trying to make sense of the world? Are we looking at what, because like, I feel like there's a lot of that, you know, when it comes to like religions and gods and things like that. And I mean, we all kind of know that essentially, but is I guess that whole belief system looking at where people were at the time and taking that into account when we are talking about these.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. The history of the various peoples are definitely important. But what I find to be the most interesting, I would say, is, you know, my area where the areas in which I have the most knowledge are going to be the Norse pantheon first, probably the Greek pantheon second, and then some loose Christianity, and then probably the Egyptian pantheon. And as you know, we understand that our original ancestry dates back to Africa, and so as they started to migrate up north, their culture started to change and their story started to change, but they're all kind of rooted in the same concepts. So like seeing what they held on to versus what they decided to change can be pretty indicative of like what was going on in their culture at that time. So in a way, okay. Yes, but also in a way, no.
That makes sense. That's interesting. And so with the similarities, well, first of all, why did you decide, like on the four that you mentioned that you know the most about, what made you want to learn about those four, I guess? Just something that you happened upon?
No, there's a little bit of a story there. So with, well, you know, Christianity is kind of an easy one. I was originally brought up being Christian, as I know you were as well. Fortunately for me, I was not brought up in such a harsh version of Christianity. It was still...
Oh, so you weren't raised in a cult?
Correct.
Humble brag.
Right. Therefore, I am better.
Therefore, no. I am less damaged. Thank you.
Oh, no, trust me, just in different ways. So, I mean, the churches that I grew up in definitely had their problems, but it was more on like a person by person basis, which I know everybody in this that's listening is understanding of that. And eventually it sort of just, I began learning more about it after I left the church I was a pretty arrogant kid. So I was self-righteous in my own way when I became non-religious, and that I always wanted to prove Christians wrong. So that's kind of where I started becoming educated on that. And then I was exposed pretty early on to Greek mythology through a video game, God of War. That's like my first exposure to that. And I just fell in love with the idea of world mythologies. And so I started learning about it here and there. And this was around the time I also started learning about some neo-mysticism stuff around the same time, that a lot of neo-mysticism principles is heavily focused on the Egyptian mythology. So I got some exposure to that. And then as I started to learn about, you know, I was asking my mother about like where we're from or like where our ancestors are from. And I started to understand a little bit more about the Norse mythology. And when I started to read about that, it all started to click. And I started noticing the similarities, and I just became enamored with the Norse mythology. And then it was really exciting when the God of War series, I don't know if you're familiar, they moved from the Greek era to the Norse era, and I felt validated.
You felt seen.
Yeah. And then Marvel fucked it up. So
fucking Marvel. I do love Marvel though. So
yeah, it's fun.
Join that hate.
I don't hate Marvel. It's superhero comics, whatever. And the Thor stuff has been around long before the movies, and so I'm not knocking it. Right. They were fun movies up until Endgame, which I think most people are like on the same wavelength as that.
Did you like Infinity War? Because I thought that was a really good one. It was also really hard to follow because there was so much happening. But
yeah, I pretty much everything up until the end of phase two, which is Endgame.
Yeah. Endgame is after Infinity War, and I wasn't super happy with Endgame either.
That's crazy. I really like the expansive.
This is now a Marvel podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've shifted. We've transitioned.
We've shifted. Surprise. Just kidding. There's probably way too many of those.
I really enjoyed kind of the expansive world building and having so many movies to watch, and especially in my like depressive episodes where I just binge watch everything. It really came through in a hard moment, because I didn't watch them as they were coming out. I spent like 2 weeks just when I was in a bad spot, just watching all of them and then finished with Endgame and never watched them again.
I honestly think that might be the best way to watch them, because with the amount of years that they, like, in between that they released them, I was kind of like, wait, what happened last? Because I kind of went and saw them as they came in theaters, but I was like, wait, what? Like, so I think you watched it in the best way, except that it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
It's very time consuming.
And I'm so, we'll stop off this tangent. Never mind.
No, we can. I was going to go into Thor a little bit just because I was like, I think that's all, like, with Marvel is the only, like, that taught me about Thor. I don't really know anything beyond Thor. Is it fairly accurate or is it not?
So this is, you know, I do appreciate how popular the Thor story has become in the Marvel universe, because it does give exposure, as well as, like, the God of War Norse storyline. It makes it a lot easier to find new information about it. Or I guess not new information, but it makes it, people start talking about it. The algorithms start boosting it. And so it makes it, like, a little more easily accessible. And I like that people are interested in learning about the history and everything like that. The Thor portrayed in the Marvel series obviously has some differences. The story itself is, it's loosely based on some fact, but the problem with the Norse pantheon is that the old Norse history is quite literally poetic in the way they wrote things down. And so they left a lot of things open to interpretation intentionally. They were more so trying to invoke emotion and have you imagine like filling in the blanks. So that is cool if you're trying to write stories based on this, because that gives you a lot of space to move. But it's very difficult for scholars of the Norse pantheon to really say if anything is exactly one way or the other, because there just straight up wasn't the writing for it. The main texts for the old Norse pantheon are going to be what are called the Eddas, and that's going to be the poetic Edda and the prose Edda. And the prose Edda is kind of the main one people go off of nowadays. And it was written by a scholar in Iceland who was a Christian. And he was trying to explain the Norse pantheon that in a way that was easily digestible to other Christians. So there's some interpretation differences from, like, the poetic Edda, which is it's not the original. It's not like all the Norse peoples got together and just wrote a book. Like, there's a bunch of ancient runic scriptures and stuff old runic scriptures and stuff. And the prose Edda was trying to combine all of that. And, it ultimately, much like the translations of the Bible, the new versions of the Bible.
That sounds very biblical.
Well, you'll find that a lot of Christianity after the Vikings were defeated, they took a lot of our practices. So,
Easter, and all of the other things that Christians have claimed now.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, Christians always got to have their hands on stuff, don't they?
I
want to taint it with my dirty fingers. Like, stop. You have your own religion. I feel like we'll find as we go through our podcast too, or our episodes this season, is that we'll find that there's always a Christian
somewhere. They're always lurking.
They're lurking in the dark corners saying, but can I have it and make it taint it? Make it Christian? Okay. All right. So Thor, and that is what was the name that you gave to it? What is the official Greek name of that you gave? Was it Neo-Greek? Neo?
What are you saying?
I don't know. I thought you said that there was there was Neo-mysticism.
Like
Norse. Is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah, Norse is just like the when you think of the Vikings or the old old Norse religion. It's like the Nordic people, the Scandinavian peoples. Yeah.
Okay. And that's what Thor, that's the category that
the Greeks have, you know, their modern day you would call it Hellenistic religions, but their pantheon, you know, the Greek pantheon, the Egyptian, and then the Norse pantheon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. I don't know why I was putting Thor with Greek. He's not Greek.
I mean, they're all very, like I said, they're all very similar.
You're so. Like, I mean, they all are the same thing. So, okay. So that's the story of Thor, which is a lot more mainstream now because of Marvel. You're welcome. And I feel like actually Greek mythology is also very popular because even as a cult-raised Christian in my little home church, in my little homeschooling, I knew about Greek mythology. And I think it's probably because like Disney movies like Hercules and we've got Zeus and Hades. And so we have all of that. So it almost seems like it's fairly popular, which again, really correlates to like, you know, God and Satan and Jesus. Like, it's kind of, this looks familiar, which is something that I always kind of thought about while watching that as well. So Greek is a little bit more, I feel like just more people know about it. I don't 100%. Feel like, did you find that as like you were diving deeper into that, that you like, are they wrong? Is there a lot of stuff left out or is that like pretty accurate?
You mean in like
as far as mainstream, like what we know about Greek mythology? I mean, I feel like there's tons of movies about it too. Like isn't Poseidon is the Greek mythology too, right?
Yeah.
We have tons of movies about Poseidon's son. And then we have, I don't know. We have tons of shit about Greek mythology.
Yeah. The media representation of Greek mythology and really any mythology, it's great to write stories about it. Like I said, because it's a lot of it is open to interpretation. I believe the Greeks were better about writing things down in a more succinct and matter of fact way. So I think they have a better history relating to their, to their mythology, but you know, in many mythologies, and the Norse kind of avoided this. The Norse pantheon was one of the last mythologies to come out of you know the world's history, and in a lot of ways, it's a little more nuanced and evolved. But other than the Norse pantheon, most mythologies have a lot of incest. In their stories, and I
so like
see,
the Bible.
Yeah, of course, right, exactly, and I see that is not generally represented very much in you know the Disney movies.
It's frowned upon.
So that's fair. So you know, it's they pick and choose. And in some way, shape, or form, a lot of it is based in fact, but like where. Like foundationally, I guess like the family trees are generally pretty accurate. The general concept of these gods are generally pretty accurate, but like the stories that are told are generally not, you know, they kind of create their own story out of the founding material.
Okay. Interesting. It's so, okay. I would say the same thing about the Bible too, but it's interesting how these are purposefully almost left open to interpretation with the stories by the writers, and then the Bible sort of gets branded as the inerrant word of God, and there is no room to interpretation, except that there is so much room to interpretation, and none of it is like super like this is the way that it is. It's just very like poetic and almost like, I don't know, metaphorical and figure it out, and what does this mean to you? And so it's just interesting that like at least with like the Greeks and the other stories, they were left open to interpretation, and that was sort of the intention to some extent. And
yeah, well, there is also a difference. There's what's known as soft polytheism and hard polytheism. And like soft polytheism is the belief in, and I guess this is where I'd categorize myself, is that like you understand the general concepts of these gods. You don't necessarily believe that these gods actually existed. You kind of just like, you believe that there is some form of god or goddess of like the bounty or something like that. And you see there are a lot of those. Even as the mythologies were around, they weren't as like, there weren't hard and fast rules like the Christians demanded that you had to believe in this way, shape, or form. Like, And then there are the hard believers who actually genuinely believe that like Zeus was actually ruling the sky. And so that kind of diversity in the belief system allowed people to, take things with a grain of salt, which is kind of why there's no like hard and fast ruling. I guess the Egyptians were a little more strict about it, as far as I understand it. Could be wrong about that, but that's kind of where you get that, because these were just straight up stories that people told. So, word of mouth right. changes things. And so then, mm-hmm. like, if from different regions, you have different stories, even within the same area. So you kind of have to piece everything together.
Right. So if you don't mind going in a little bit to the Egyptian version, and then I'd like to hear more about like overall the belief and like what you sort of, I don't want to say the word practice, but like just sort of, I don't know how you apply that in your everyday, not everyday life. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just want to learn more about like where you're at with it, but I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit about the Egyptians. Cause I feel like, again, growing up Christian, we heard about Egyptian gods mm-hmm. and, you know, like that was just something that was sort of like there, but it was wrong. But, you know, like we have the Prince of Egypt too. Like we've got Disney and we've got, I feel like they're like the power of Ra. Like, and so to some extent, it's not like foreign, but they did seem at least portrayed in that movie and just portrayed in the Bible that they were more like strict about their gods and their practices and their, I mean, because even like when they were buried and they believed in the afterlife and they believed that they would take things with them mm-hmm. and it was all very sacred, which I think is actually kind of cool. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So the Egyptian pantheon is, I'm still learning about all of them, but what's interesting about the Egyptians is that their civilization spans for such a long time. I think there's something about like 3,000 years that their structure, their government structure, their cultural structure, their religious structure changed, again, based on region as well. So at one point they were very hard and fast with their beliefs. Other times they were not necessarily, it was more just kind of like come as you are type thing. In some ways. and so where do I start with the Egyptians? I guess I can start by.
Was their main god? Sorry, go ahead.
No. What was your question?
I was just asking like if their main, did they have a main god or did they just have multiple gods?
It depends on the timing. It depends on who you ask. They're like originally they're kind of like what you would see. And this is where we kind of get into the archetypes. Every pantheon has a sort of like all father, main god, like the king of gods, whoever, which
like the Trinity, they all sort of have that.
There's a lot of you find a lot of threes. So the three in the Egyptian mythology are going to be Osiris, Isis, and Horus, I believe. And so Osiris married Isis, and they were brother and sister, of course. Then they birthed Horus.
So that was baby.
Yeah. But even none of those three are like the all father God. Like the, one was, his name was Amun, who eventually Amun is like is kind of easily translated to the hidden one, was not a big role in, any particular story. However, Amun like permeated everything. So like Ra is known as the sun god, but Amun kind of like supersedes that, has a hand in the sun, the moon, the desert, like is just kind of, it is what you would consider to be like the big G in Christianity.
Big G.
but eventually Amun did merge with Ra, and then you get Amun Ra. And so that's how Amun was able to come in and actually play a part in the stories. And so that is their like all father type god, is the Amun Ra.
Okay.
And for a long time, the big focus, they had various gods that they were like really, really into for a long time, which is something I really like about the Egyptian culture, is that they were really, really into Isis. She's like the mother god, and she was just wicked powerful, incredibly wise. She ended up tricking, I believe it was Ra, to speak his true name through like some scheme that she hatched. And when Ra speaks his true name to you, you gain all this power. So she just like would always try to find new ways to become more powerful. And she used that power to benefit humanity and the other gods. So people like worshiped her more so in a lot of ways than other gods as well. But they you know, also gave credence to pretty much every other god. They were very, very centered in their religious beliefs in that way.
Interesting. I think what's really cool too, in every other paganistic, I guess, or anything that isn't Christian, essentially, there's always goddesses. There's always some form of a woman god figure. And then there's Christianity, and it's like the fucking patriarchy. You know? Yeah. It's like, women are not, what are those? No, it's all men. And like, in reality, I think with just the way the world works, having a goddess makes sense, because like, you know, they're life bringing. So it almost like makes sense to have goddesses in some form, but not with Christianity. So I don't know. It's interesting that it seems like, I mean, is there any other religion that doesn't have a goddess? Except, well, I can't ask you that. You're like, well, yes, I know all. But as far as like the ones that you've studied, are there any without goddesses?
No. Women usually play a pretty important role in spiritual practices and beliefs. Like the Muism, I think, the Korean shamanistic belief is like centered on the woman. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah. Christianity is distinctly different in a lot of ways. Even when it comes to like the concept of death, most cultures were pretty accepting and actually welcomed death. And for Christians, it was like this disastrous, like it was almost like a backpedaling of acceptance of our ultimate fate. But especially like even in a lot of Native Indian culture or Native American cultures, I'm gonna get canceled for that. a lot of Native American cultures, like it's centered on the woman. I was talking to one of my Native friends. I was doing a school project with her, and she was like, "Yeah, no, women are like the focal point of our culture, because they do pretty much everything, and all the stupid men just go out and hunt." You know what I mean? Yeah. So
it's true. I mean, yeah, it's like women are the fabric of society and holding up community and bringing life and all of that. And like men almost have like a secondary role to some extent, versus in our very Western culture and our very Christian culture, it's like the opposite. But I don't feel like we see that anywhere else. And so it's, yeah. And so with Christianity, at least the way that we were taught, it's almost like it's permeated society in some way, because also with death, at least a very Western view is to not talk about it and be afraid of it. And, you know, it's like the worst thing ever. And to the point where like the way that we handle death is like so fucked up. And really hard on the people who are surviving. But anyway, that's another episode.
And you know, that's not to say that, you know, especially, I mean, you could make the argument that it is, or actually it very much is the same way today. You know, these religions and ancient peoples, they did give a lot of deserved respect to the women figures in their culture. However, there was still a ton of sexual assault. You know, a ton of violence against women. So what they taught was also very much like Christianity. What they taught is very different from how they operated on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's history is unfortunate.
It's so unfortunate. Okay. So as far as like you personally, in this archetypal paganism, how do you view like deities? Like, are there like specific deities that hold like particular significance for you? Are they the ones we just talked about? Are they like, how does that fit into, I guess it's like enough to like know about these things and like, but I guess I'm just wondering for you, do they fit in any sort of like, is there any significance, I guess?
Yeah. So
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So yeah, as I was saying, I focus most and live my life mostly on the Norse side of things. And so I've developed what some Wiccans would call like a hearth cult, which is like, I believe they use two or three main deities to like worship essentially. And mine would be Odin, Tyr, and Freya, with my shadow archetypes, archetype being the Loki or the trickster archetype, which I deem to be kind of separate from the your big three. And the way
what
I see
the shadow mean really so, quick.
Yeah, Carl Jung, when he was developing the archetypes, he made a claim that every individual has on a personal level what he calls the shadow archetype, and that is essentially all of the bad thoughts and bad actions that seemingly go against what like an otherwise good person would follow, like these destructive tendencies, the intrusive thoughts that cause people to do things that you wouldn't necessarily believe them to be capable of. Okay. And so his belief was that everybody has a shadow of some sort. And I'm generally inclined to believe that. And his solution to that was like, you have to let it in and you have to process it, because if you don't, then you start, for example, if your shadow is like based in anger, and you try to suppress it, you become a very passive aggressive person because you're not dealing with it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I'm
you have to
definitely
accept that part of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely learning a lot about that, in my quest for sobriety right now. So, anyway, so regarding how I view the deities, I do view them in sort of a, I don't necessarily believe that like Odin existed or anything like that.
Right.
But I do give credence to the archetypal nature of the stories that were told across the religions, meaning that the stories that were created and told are an extension, I believe Jung called them like a primordial image of the archetypes of the collective humanity of those religions. So like Odin, for example, is known as the sacrificial god. And I'll get into his story a little bit because it's one of the reasons that he's in my so-called hearth cult. But the kind of connection that comes from a collective consciousness that creates these stories, I believe, is the closest that we can probably get to tapping into some sort of universal energy. You know, that's why like actual cults are pretty dangerous, because it's just one dude usually. And so like, right. who the hell are you to say? But I guess kind of getting into the foundation of my beliefs is that I believe in some form of universal order. I don't believe in necessarily like a creationist God. I don't believe in like a specific methodology on how we are supposed to operate based on this. I believe that that there is some sort of order to this, that is a little bit of like a tapestry or a network that connects everybody through the universal design, that there is some sort of point, and that in certain ways the universe does have a hand in the way that your life plays out, whether that's predeterminism or, you know, anything like that. But and I believe that humanity, each individual person, is tapped into that in some way, shape, or form, but because of the limitations of our psyche, we are not able to make sense of a lot of it. But if you gather all of these people and are and like share these ideas, and you create this kind of like group consciousness, and these stories that you tell is like a good way to kind of find, and this is kind of where the archetypes come from, is like these archetypes are a sort of connection to that universe. And so when people tell these stories and create these stories in some way, shape, or form, they are tapping into the true nature of the universe. And so I believe by reading about all of these different beliefs and listening to how these groups of people came up with these ideas, you can find a common connection, and through the similarities and even through some of the differences, you can find a commonality that will give you some sort of guidance towards the rest of the, how the universe operates. And so that's kind of how I see the deities, is just an extension of the human connection to the universe, basically.
Wow. I like that a lot, because even in my own like journey of deconstruction, I feel like that is something that holds true, that we repeatedly see is our connection to each other and our connection to the universe. And, you know, you can call it God or whatever, you know, but I really love that that this sort of belief system spirituality takes a collective of all of those and like shows connection in that way. And it's like, it doesn't actually matter what exact deity you believe in. It's that all of these stories are connected over time, over so much time.
Yeah.
And like, they're still around today for a reason, and we all can connect with them in different ways. And at the same time, it is really us trying to make sense of the universe and the world around us. And I don't think that's ever going to go away, because even no matter how much we find out about the world, it's never going to be, we're never going to figure shit out. You know what I mean? As far as like, and I don't think, I mean, until we, you know, possibly, you know, pass on. But I, even then I'm like, will we ever know? I don't know. But it's one thing to feel so terribly alone in the universe, but when we're all like trying to figure this out together and talking about it, I think that's like so beautiful.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It makes a lot of sense. It makes so much sense. So that's interesting. I don't know. When you say that, it's like, that's not what I think of, but I love that definition. I like it a lot.
And it's why I was so excited to talk about this, because I never get to talk about anything. Like, I never get to talk about this sort of stuff. I never get to talk about this sort of stuff. And which is why I was telling you that, like, I've kind of lost my education in a lot of ways. And so I got back into it, like researching to be able to talk about this with some sort of confidence. Because, you know, sure. I used to know how to not speak, but I used to know how to sign in sign language, but I don't know any deaf people, and I just straight up lost it. You know what I mean? It's kind of the same.
You don't use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's sad.
It's
go find some deaf people.
Yeah, right. I really should diversify my friend group.
Should. Why don't you know deaf people? God.
You know, it's my fault. You're right.
So is there any, I guess, I don't know why I keep bringing, I guess because paganism for me brings my brain to like rituals and practices. Is that a thing in this line of philosophy, I guess, for you? Or is this, it's the wrong kind of paganism?
It's up to the individual. For me, I'm a little lazy in that regard. For lack of a better term, I do pray and or meditate in like the direction of these deities. It's more so like giving credence to my archetypes and the archetypes of my ancestors. You know, there have been cases where I, like, a long time ago, one of my best friends committed suicide. And so I went into my mother's backyard and planted like a garden in honor of him, and that was servicing Freya, basically.
Okay.
So like the rituals are, any, like, you can, there are certain sects of this belief system that have, like, if you go really, like, the new modern day Norse religion is called Asatru, and they do have very specific religious and spiritual rituals. It depends. Like I said, I'm a little lazy with it. I could, but I don't, I don't know if, the way that I think about it, kind of the philosophical aspect, I don't think the rituals are absolutely necessary. For me, at least, I don't knock anybody who does it. And I don't know, if I weren't as lazy, I probably would. I do like don a lot of jewelry that is indicative of that, of the belief system. So I always try to keep some sort of physical, connection to those things. Like, I have a pendant that, is surrounded by the, what they call the Elder Futhark, which is the, old Norse, runic alphabet, that surrounds the wolves, Skoll and Hati, who are the ones that chase the sun and the moon. I do integrate it in my life in certain ways, but other ways not.
Okay. Interesting. So it's kind of just up to personal choice of expression and how you want to, I guess, sort of live that out or not.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not, there are communities regarding this, and I'm sure if anybody who are part of those communities,
people are screaming at you right now.
Yeah, like, what the fuck are you talking about? You don't speak for us. It's very possible. This is a very personal, like,
email us.
I don't want to hear it. So, you know, I've, in the spirit of syncretism, I have kind of created my own version of this. And I think that's kind of the point of archetypal paganism, is that it's very specific and individual to you. But in terms of, like, a Santru religion, for example, I know, like, for me, actually, like, if I ever get married, I do want to have, a wedding in the tradition of the Asatru, tradition, not solely isolated, obviously, like, I'm totally down to go with, like, your modern normal wedding, but, like, at some point would like just a small little side ceremony where I can practice my religious, bonding ceremony. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, have something in there that is, you know, personal and special to you, that represents what you believe in. I think that would be cool.
Yeah. And so with the Norse deities, you know, I found that I really related, to them, in their stories. There are some stories in there where I've taken their stories to a T and been able to apply it to my life and have found, like, benefit and great results to it, through that kind of education and, application of the stories and the morals that were kind of behind it. And like I said earlier, the Norse pantheon is a little bit, I think, tells better stories, just because they were so late to the game, and has a lot more nuance and emotion. And, you know, they left a lot of things open to interpretation. So, like, it leaves a lot of room for you to apply it to your life.
Yeah, which is cool. And I think that's honestly how it should be, because human beings are so different and so complex. I feel like when there's just one way to do something, it's like we don't all fit in the same carbon copy.
Right.
So you don't belong to a community.
Correct.
As far, okay.
Except for, you know, the Cheers to Leaving closed, Facebook group that you can access through Facebook on Facebook, you know.
Yeah, that's your community. That's your, that's where you will convert us.
If I ever get back on socials.
Yeah, exactly. So did you tell the story that you said you were going to tell earlier? Do you want to tell that? I don't know what it was, but you should tell it.
Yeah. So I did sort of reference it too. So Odin is known as the sacrificial god. And so I'll talk about his story and then how I was able to apply it to my life in a really, really constructive way. So if you remember we'll go back to the Marvel movies. If
come
you remember
full circle, baby.
if you remember, Odin wears an eye patch. You remember that, it's because he's missing an eye. I don't remember which eye it is. I don't remember if they even really talk about, I don't remember them talking about it.
It's been a while.
But Odin, so the thing with the Norse gods that I really like too is that different from other pantheons, they didn't really assign gods to certain elements of nature. Like the Greeks had Zeus, who was the god of lightning. You know what I mean? Egyptians had Anubis, who was kind of like the god of the process of death, not the god of the afterlife, but they like had very distinct roles in what they did. The Norse pantheon doesn't really have that. They just kind of were gods who eventually, after all of the stories were written, people started to put associations on them. So like when you kind of talk about Norse pantheon, you can sometimes say there's like two or three different gods of war. But there's like one main god of war, which is Tyr, which I can talk about later. But anyway, so Odin, the story of Odin is interesting. He was very, very focused on gaining the wisdom of the universe. His whole thing was like just trying to learn as much as possible. You know, he would, in his realm, Asgard, he would sit and try to learn as much about humanity and the ancient magics. He had two ravens that would fly around Midgard, which would be the earth realm, to pick up information about the humans, and every day they would come back and relay that information. Somewhere along the line, he learned of an ancient prophecy that would lead to what is called Ragnarok, or basically the destruction of the gods. When he learned about that, he found out he was going to die at the hands of, I believe, Fenrir. I'm not mistaken.
Was that Cate Blanchett? In the Marvel movie.
I don't understand the joke.
Was that his daughter? Didn't he have like an evil daughter that he was like afraid of? Or is that just completely bullshit? Do you remember that? And it's played by Cate Blanchett, and then like Loki and Thor are like, oh, we'll fight you because you killed our dad. Totally annihilates both of them.
Let me see what her
Cate Blanchett? And you're like, what?
What was her name in that movie? Let me see.
I don't remember, but it sounded like a female name that you said.
Hella.
Hella. Okay, never mind.
I'm not familiar with. Is Hella a total fabrication? Hella is a total fabrication. So she's not part of the Norse pantheon.
Okay.
As far as I understand it. But
Blanchett's character is not real. Jot that down.
Hey, Cameron from the future here. I realized after recording that Hela is based on the goddess Hel. I imagine they changed her name in the movies to not, you know, spook people, because Hel is scary. So she's not a total fabrication. The portrayal of Hel in the movie is a total fabrication. She's not like a spiteful, destructive goddess. She's more so pretty apathetic and kind of mad at Odin, but not enough to like bring about Ragnarok as they portrayed. So while not a total fabrication, she pretty much is. All right, bye. But no, Fenrir is a son of Loki, who is just a giant wolf, basically. Anyway, I believe he dies from Loki. Basically, the way that Ragnarok plays out is all the gods go to battle in some way, shape, or form, and they all end up killing each other. You know, humanity still lives afterwards, and so they basically live lives without gods anymore. When he became aware of his ultimate demise, his intentions for wisdom became clouded. It became much more about self-preservation, and it was kind of a plague on him, because it was the only thing he could focus on, and he was looking everywhere for ancient magic or some form of universal understanding that could that he could use to stave off Ragnarok. And in some ways it was also selfless. Like he wanted his people to, you know, still live in prosperity and everything like that. But what he ended up doing was he went to what is known as Yggdrasil, or the world tree. It is the kind of the connection between what are the nine realms. It's, you know, in in like the Marvel movies, for example. Or I'm just going to equate it to everything from there because that's what people know.
Because that is what people know. Yeah, that's what I know. This is all I know.
So like the gatekeeper Heimdall, you know, he holds the Bifrost, the Bifrost being the Rainbow Batty. Bridge. Yeah.
He's such a baddie.
Even in the stories, he's fucking dope.
That's awesome. I feel like they casted him correctly.
100%. But that kind of Bifrost, I don't think the Bifrost is mentioned, but it's not like the Rainbow Bridge that is portrayed or anything like that. Basically, that connection, that bridge is Yggdrasil. Yggdrasil is the world tree that holds all nine of the realms, basically. And it's kind of like the source of the universe. And so it is, in some ways, a physical place. There are creatures that live on the tree. For example, there's one, I can't remember if it's a dragon, but it's some beast creature called Nidhogg who... just sits at the base of the tree and just chews on its roots. And then there's this squirrel that lives on the world tree that will go down and like talk to Nidhogg, and the Nidhogg will like communicate insults that it wants to relay to other people. And so the squirrel will go just run up to different realms and be like, oh, Nidhogg said this, you're a bitch, and then just run back to Nidhogg. like super what funny shit. Like yeah, I don't anyway, so the world tree is supposed to be like the true source of like the universal power. So Odin goes to the base of the root tree to meet this this human-ish being called Mimir. Is just a head that is embedded into the tree over this well of universal knowledge. And in order to strike a deal with Mimir, Odin plucks out one of his eyes and drops his eye into the well. That's how he loses his eye. And he learns some knowledge about that, but it's not enough. He goes through a second act of sacrifice that I can't remember off the top of my head, but the third one and the big one is that he went up to one of the branches of Yggdrasil and he hanged himself for 9 days and nine nights, by his neck. And through this, somehow he was able to, learn more about the ancient runes. And in the Norse stories, the runes are less of a language thing and it's more of like an embodiment of certain magical qualities. So he was trying to, understand the universal magic, and he received all these great visions that he swore was going to help him stave off Ragnarok. And at the end of it all, through all of his self-sacrifice, it ended up being entirely futile. And not to say that he wasted his time doing it, but his intentions were rooted in self-preservation. And in turn, it caused him to ignore a lot of really important ideas and messages that would have otherwise at least helped him live the fuller life. In basically trying to stave off his destruction, he caused his early destruction through self-sacrifice in many ways. One more thing that is important to this story is that Odin's actions after learning certain things through his sacrifice took action that eventually brought on Ragnarok. So in a lot of ways, it was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is important to my story later.
That makes sense.
And so as it relates to my story and why he is part of my main hearth cult is I, from a young age, became obviously very interested in a lot of things. And when I was about 13 or 14, I went through like a bona fide existential crisis that lasted probably 5 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah,
it was an existential crisis.
It was a nightmare. It was really rough. And so I started diving in. I needed to understand everything there was to understand about the universe. So I jumped into Eastern mysticism, neo-mysticism, world religions, and I started studying physics because that was the truest way that I was going to be able to understand at least the scientific concept of the universe. And I dove so hard into this. Because I mean, there were times where I would stay home from school for like a week because I was sick to my stomach. I would lay on the floor for the whole week just watching fucking random bullshit. And a lot of that, I can think of one example of what that stemmed from was that I realized one day that in any direction that I look, I cannot find a single piece of, at least in my immediate vicinity, I cannot find a single piece of land that has been untouched by humanity. Like the earth has basically been completely, I grew up in Orange County. So it's like, you know, it's like, obviously everything has been built on. I kind of came up with this idea of like the eight sided box that we live in that, you know, every direction, humanity has touched the eight sides of the box, but the only thing that is left open that is not touched by humanity is the sky. Like it's the only thing that we haven't somehow managed to ruin. So I always kind of likened it to this like cage that we live in that you can only look up to see like the remnants of our universal history.
That's super positive.
And it made me sick to my stomach for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet that's, that would be rough.
Yeah. And so I went on this just extremely unhealthy quest for the understanding of the universe, trying to answer questions that to this day, nobody knows the answer to. Like I thought I was going to be the one. I committed my entire life to doing this. Also, it was like a way of getting out of poverty. I grew up in extreme poverty. And so like going through physics, it was my way out basically. And I dove so deep into this that like I graduated high school early. I graduated at 16. By the time I was 17, I was a third year at a top 10 university in my field. I was slated to graduate. I was slated to graduate when I was 19. And had these like I you know it was just mine for the taking. But eventually, because my intentions were wrong, because I was trying to do this in a way that was going to help me understand the universe in a way that I could survive, because I was so sick to my stomach over this existential dread, it started to bleed into every other aspect of my life. It was destroying relationships. I was so arrogant. I was so self-righteous. Like I lost the human element of myself. And it got so bad that shortly after I turned 18, I attempted suicide. And I woke up just laying in this field and just found this new sense of peace and humility. And after that, I don't know if you know this, my name's not Cameron. My first name's Michael.
You're gonna drop this on me on our podcast, Cameron. Cameron's like, I'm actually not who I said I was.
Yeah, funnily enough, I'm named
just
after.
Kidding.
It's all good. I'm named after the Archangel Michael, which is funny.
How biblical.
Yeah, and so I
didn't know that. I'm learning this with you, folks.
And so as I was laying there, I found this like new sense of humility that just like kind of washed over me. And I do fully believe that Michael died that day and Cameron was born after. And when I came across the Odin story, it was like I sacrificed everything to achieve this goal that I thought was going to fix everything. And in all reality, it was never like the problem was within me. It was something that I was never going to be able to understand. And that might be by design. We may not be allowed to understand what the makings of the universe are. And so like, that story really resonated with me, and you know, him being the self-sacrificial wisdom God is a lesson in humility and a lesson to understand and accept the fact that we will not know everything, and we frankly don't need to know everything in order to live happy lives. You know,
I agree with that. I think honestly, the more you know, the less happy you are. Like when they say ignorance is bliss, that's such a stupid word to say, but like to some extent they're not wrong. And I don't know who they are, but people, stupid people. Like, and that's what's hard too, when you are more of an intelligent person, right? Say like your brain just works in a certain way that you do want to know things and you start to learn about them. I have found in my own journey that I actually do become more unhappier because I can see right through shit now. Right. And you're not like just taking people at their words. You're like, oh no, this is just another fucking ploy. Or this person says this, but actually in reality, this is what they're doing. Or, you know, you just look at the state of the world and you're like, oh my God, we're fucked. And it's really hard to be happy in that state of everything sucks and we're dying. So that does make sense. But I do think, for some reason, we all have to go on our own journeys of death in some form, to arrive to whatever peaceful place we're at eventually. And obviously you were so like sick with existential dread and crisis. And that is something that's hard, I think, to get out of. And I don't know if you'd agree with this, but do you think almost like the secret, it's not a secret, but the sort of, I guess, the antidote to that is to sit with the unknown and make peace with the unknown and be okay with the unknown to some extent?
Yeah, I think it's human nature to classify and understand or try to understand everything. And mm-hmm. it's just not how it works.
Yeah.
Even when it comes to like interpersonal relationships, like people can tell you who they are all day and night, but at the end of the day, like they're going to operate in a way that sometimes just doesn't make sense to you. Mm-hmm. Even if you really truly believe you know a person, and I think
they're so complex.
Yeah, and I think we're the core. I think our human condition is the idea of not being able to know everything, or even very much. Like if we like really take into consideration the stuff that we do know, it pales in comparison to like what's actually out there. Mm-hmm. And I think the only way to navigate that is you do have to accept that it's an exercise in humility. You have to understand that you are not made to understand these things, and you are only able to understand and control yourself. And in some cases, in a lot of ways, we don't even understand ourselves, which is like, and so like through self-reflection, you can, in a way, that's how you understand the nature of the universe, is how your role ties into like the grand tapestry. And it's through that acceptance and understanding that I believe you can get through most existential dread.
I like that. It's bringing it, I guess, away from just you and saying that we're all going through this together, and this, we're all a part of the same tapestry, like you said. I like that. Okay. Quick follow-up question to the name change, because I am Shooketh. I'm just kidding. I'm fine. Is Cameron your middle name?
Did
you choose Cameron? Okay. Okay. You didn't just like pluck it out of the sky and be like, I will be called Cameron now.
Yeah, no, it's just my middle name.
Okay, cool. I don't think that's weird. I think that makes a lot of sense given your journey, but also a lot of people just prefer their middle names as well. Now I'm envisioning you as Michael. Interesting.
Michael was an asshole. Don't think too much on it.
Fucking Michael.
I got friends who are like, that's real Michael behavior out of you, Cameron.
They're just calling you out. They're like, okay, Michael, time to get out. okay. I'm trying to think if there, okay. Well, you mentioned Carl Jung, mm-hmm. and he has a book. What is the book called?
I don't even know. I'm not really all that. I'm not even really all that.
You're like, are you kidding me? I don't even know. Okay.
I actually just found out through the research for this episode specifically that he is like the father of syncretism and archetypal paganism.
Didn't even know?
Yeah. I was picking up these things outside of him. So I'm like the concept of the shadow is something I learned yesterday, you know?
But I've already picked mine.
Well, you know, okay. And I always kind of went back and forth. It's something I always kind of innately understood. Like I wanted to, when I'm picking my hearth cult, I kind of wanted to stick to the rule of three, and I always had Tyr, Odin, and Freya in there, but like Loki was an intrinsic part of my being in some way, shape, or form. And I always knew he had to fit. And so like when I learned about the shadow, I was like, oh, there we go. Okay. I already knew that.
Yeah. Nice. I don't know a lot about Loki in the actual sense that Loki was written. I only mm-hmm. know Marvel Loki, but I like him a lot. I don't know if you've seen the Loki series. It's like a mind fuck and it's awesome. And I really enjoyed it. It's all about time.
I've seen a little bit about it. I actually really like the way they portray Loki in the Marvel story, because as shadow archetypes go, you know, typically you see in like the Greek or the Egyptian mythologies that like the shadow archetype is just evil essentially. But in mm-hmm. even in Norse mythology, like I said, there's a lot of nuance. Loki is not necessarily evil. He's just kind of different. You know, he's the one that brings Shady. On Ragnarok. Yeah, he's the one that brings on Ragnarok by killing one of Odin's sons. But it wasn't his intention. It was just, I don't even remember exactly why. He's just a shifty motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like,
he's complicated.
Yeah.
He's complicated.
And I think the Marvel movies actually got that pretty well. Like, I mean, I think in the beginning he was like supposed to be this just pure evil being, but he grew, you know, and I think that's a little mm-hmm. more in line with like the actual teachings of Loki.
Yeah, he definitely had a character arc like throughout the movies, which I always enjoy. I always like watching characters develop and grow mm-hmm. and change. So that's the Odin story is interesting. I didn't know any of that about Odin or the sacrificial, which every time you said sacrificial, I just kept thinking about Jesus.
Well,
because I actually
there, like I said, there is a lot of Christianity that pulls from the Norse, and obviously the written, like, you know, the Christian history predates the Norse pantheon, but
oh, it does.
Well, yeah, because the Norse pantheon, I believe, started around 700, 800. It's one of the, like, it's one of the most recent ones out there. And you know, the Christian story started at year zero. So
zero. I love that there's a year zero.
Yeah. So it does predate it, and the Norse god Tyr is thought to be heavily related to the Roman god Mars. Tyr is the god of war, but I really he's more so the god of justice. He was never like that bloodthirsty god of war that like Ares was in the Greek mythology. He is much more for understanding the intelligent use of war when as a last worst case scenario. He is like the guarantor of contracts. You know, he believes in universal justice, basically. And so very empathetic individual who can dish it out if he absolutely needs to, you know. Mm-hmm. which is why I like Tyr as well. His story is pretty interesting too.
Man, now I like want to do a deep dive on all these gods.
The Norse pantheon is really cool.
It is so cool. This is, I'm convinced. Cameron, I'm going to convert.
Converting!
Right. He's like, my evil plan works. No, but I think it would be cool to like dive deeper into these. I've never really done that. I just sort of like refer to them when I refer to how so many things are similar when talking to Christians. I'm like, no, I feel like...
I do want to die on a hill real quick.
Do it.
And I don't know if I'll get much argument out of our community, but I still hold to this day that Christianity is not the monotheistic religion that it claims to be, and this fact has a lot of ties to polytheism. I know it says that there's only one God, but even when you're talking about the Holy Trinity, you know, it is still tied into one God. But and this is, you know, I can go back and forth on the Trinity. But even the fact that you have like named angels in your religious belief, like there are such things as lesser gods. And, you know, obviously there's a difference between the big G, the angels, and humans. But the angels are... If you took away the big G, like the angels would be gods in their own right. You know what I mean? And people pray to these angels all the time. Like I was named after an archangel. You know what I mean? So like a lot of polytheistic tradition, and really bold of you to go off and call other religions heathens and pagans and all that. When I don't know, I still hold true to this day that Christianity is not a true monotheistic monotheistic religion, except for there is a sect of Christianity is called Socinians that do not believe in the Holy Trinity and do not believe that Jesus was an extension of God. It was just a mere man. And so there are sects of Christianity that I do believe are purely monotheistic, but most people are not thinking about that.
But evangelicals, yeah.
No.
I wondered too if like it did start out, you know, with there being multiple gods, like even but then they sort of did this whole, like, you know, mind flips to be like, but they're the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's always so hard, at least just as a human being, you know, to wrap your mind around. You're like, they're different. They have different names. They talk to you at different times, but they're the same person. Like, so I almost like that would really line up with what you just said, because someone just was like, okay, well, we can just fix this really quick. They're all the same person. Okay, guys. And then the angels, they're basically just like God's sidekicks, you know, they're just, but I think that makes sense. I think there's a point there. I don't think. Yeah, it's just not something we think about, but I think that makes sense.
Well, and as you know, Christians hold the all-time gold medal in mental gymnastics. So
Exactly. They will. I mean, that's why apologetics are so exhausting. You can, like, argue a point that everyone agrees is objective and it makes sense. And they're like, no. Let me just pull something out of my butt that makes no sense, but I'm going to make you think it makes sense. I think if you have to mental gymnastic that much to defend your religion or the foundation of your truth, you don't really probably have much to begin with.
Yeah. And
it should speak for itself.
I do kind of want to put a disclaimer too on my general beliefs or my general opinion of Christianity, which might catch some flack in our community.
Yeah.
Is that like, I am not one to, and I'm not saying this in the way that I believe you are, the opposite of this. I think you probably are this way as well. I don't mind Christian faith. You know what I mean? You know, I think faith is individual to the person. And I think, I do, like, in archetypal paganism, I still do give credence to the Christian faith. Where I hold exception is like organized religion in general. And when it's used to, like, used as a tool of
people.
Yeah, oppression and power and all of that. So if there are any Christians listening to this and like, you are just not trying to push your shit on other people, like, more power to you. But as soon as you start to try to oppress other people, I don't fuck with you anymore.
Yeah. Like, progressive Christianity, I think I can fuck with, because I've met some progressive Christians and I don't feel like they're pushing their faith on me. I don't feel like they're out there trying to hate groups of people. And I really think they're doing the work to check themselves and to make sure that they are, you know, I guess doing faith right, if that makes sense. And I don't, I'm a little bitter still. So I have to watch myself, especially because I live in the fucking Midwest and everyone's a Christian. I have to watch my mouth. Oh my God. I've definitely mouthed off to some people who I just assumed maybe weren't a Christian. And then they were like hardcore Christians. And I was like, oh God, I forgot I'm in the Midwest. So yeah, I'm bitter because I think of just what we just said, the oppression, the control, the power, the, you know, the shame and guilt, and this is a sin, and you're inherently just a bad person and you're nothing without God. And so there's those points that just make me a little bit bitter, but this is what I am working on though, is trying not to go to the opposite end of that. And I think exploring this season with these other spiritual practices, because I have a tendency to just throw those out and be like, it's all bullshit, because of my experience with spirituality and religion growing up, right? Like, I just kind of want to like throw it all out and be like, nah, it's all bullshit. But I really want to open my mind to better ways of practicing, to better philosophies, to better, you know, spiritual practices that are not like Christianity in the sense of the oppression and entitlement and pushing their stuff on other people. So I think it's important to do this no matter what, you know, journey you're on, but especially for us in this community. And yeah, if you are still, because I think we have quite a few that are still Christians and not ready to either let that go or just deconstruct it and stay a Christian, that's totally fine. We support you in your journey. We just don't support the oppressive bullshit that comes with evangelicalism or Christian nationalism. We do not support that.
Yeah, just to all those viewers, just know if I'm talking shit about Christianity, I'm talking about the organized religion aspect.
We're talking about the bad one. We're not talking about you.
Yeah, you're great. You're great. You're expanding your knowledge by trying to expand your worldview by listening. So you're fine.
Exactly. I feel like the people listening to this podcast are not like hardcore evangelical. They would have turned it off in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
People that are here trying to learn and broaden their horizons, like, that's awesome, because I have massive respect for anyone trying to do that, no matter what your faith is.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's enough backpedaling and not trying to get canceled. We're just sitting here like, but wait. Anyway.
Called out.
I feel like that probably wraps up this episode that we just did. I learned so much. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed talking about it. So excited to continue this with you. So everyone, thanks for being here, and thanks for being flexible, and thanks for exercising your brain, because I know I had to. It's crazy to learn all these new terms and these new practices, and we got really deep and into the nitty-gritty, and that's a favorite thing to do of mine. So we will be back in a couple weeks with some new stuff for you. It'll be something new every episode, but we're going to stay on the theme of this spirituality, religion, theories. And yeah, email us if you have something specific that you would like us to talk about. If there's something that you've been wondering about or something that you've wanted to learn more about, we're totally down to hear that and possibly do an episode on that. Cause that would be, we want you to come on this journey with us. We want you to be a part of it.
Your input will be very valuable to us. So don't be afraid to reach out.
Yes, exactly. Because we're listening. All right. Do you have anything else you want to say besides to wrap up your paganism?
My dirty heathenistic paganism.
Your dirty heathenism.
No, not in those regards, but just do want to say, thanks for bringing me into this journey with you. It's something I'm super excited about. And, as I said in the post, it's being able to get some first person exposure to other ideas and cultures and religions is going to be something that I don't take for granted. It's a very unique position to be in, and I'm very appreciative of that fact. And I'm just really excited to get to work with you and the rest of the community.
I'm excited too. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Cheers to Leaving. Please consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Subscribe and share with your friends and others who are on a journey of deconstruction and are looking to expand their horizons.
If you're looking for a community that understands what it's like leaving religion and are going through the same process as you, consider joining our Facebook support group. Be a part of the conversation, meet like-minded individuals, and get support. You can find the link in our show notes. We love hearing from you, so drop us a message, share your thoughts, or suggest topics you'd like us to discuss in future episodes. Email us at cheerstoleaving@gmail.com. Take care and catch you on the next episode of Cheers to Leaving.